With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi folks, Oisin here from the Troubles podcast. Just a short recording before the episode begins to let you know that I'll be attending CrimeCon this year. It's taking place in London on the 11th and 12th of June, and then it's also going to be in Glasgow on the 10th of September. So it's a convention for all fans of true crime, and there'll be lots of podcasters there, as well as lots of other stuff and events and speakers. And I'd actually love to meet some of you. If anyone is a big fan of the show, I'd love to have a chat and say hi. And I'm not too sure how much the tickets are, but you can avail of a 10% discount by using the code TROUBLES at checkout. So just check out the social media for the Troubles podcast and you can find links on how to buy tickets online. Thanks, and looking forward to seeing you there. Before we get into this show, I'd like to give a brief content warning. This episode contains scenes of a violent and disturbing nature, so if that's something you're sensitive to, I'd recommend giving this episode a miss. Now, let's get on with the show. October 1987, and Dublin dentist John O'Grady has just been kidnapped, with the kidnappers demanding a hefty ransom for his safe return. To show just how serious they were, parts of John's fingers were chopped off and sent to his family. So who was the man behind this brutal operation? He is most known for this kidnapping, but also gained significant notoriety after his involvement in numerous shootouts with members of the security forces on both sides of the border. And time again, he managed to evade capture. This is the story of the border fox, Desi O'Hare. This is the Troubles podcast, a podcast about the violence and bloodshed that occurred in Northern Ireland, the Republic of Ireland, and Great Britain, as multiple sides and organisations waged a bloody conflict over the status of Northern Ireland. Desi O'Hare was born on October 26, 1956, in Keady, County Armagh. His family are from a strong Republican background. His grandmother had served time in prison in London after keeping Republicans, and his father and six uncles were interned in the 1940s. One even died while interned on the Isle of Man. As a young child, O'Hare was brought to school by the wife of an RUC officer who lived next door. From an early age, he was described as obsessively sectarian and increasingly violent. O'Hare joined up with the South Armagh Brigade of the Provisional IRA. I've spoken about them before. They were a fierce faction of the Provisional IRA and known for their loyal members. In later years, when the Provisional IRA had to split up into different cells because of the abundance of leaks and informers, the South Armagh Brigade didn't have this problem, as they were such a tight-knit group. They secured at least one sniper rifle, which was used to kill a number of members of the British Army alongside roadside bombs and mortars. Their operations in South Armagh were so successful that the British Army soon had to travel from outpost to outpost in helicopters, as travelling on roads was deemed too dangerous. The South Armagh Brigade of the IRA were covered in more detail back in Season 1, if you're interested. Over the next few years, Desi O'Hare was involved in a number of attacks and all-out firefights. Many of these accounts involved run-ins with the Irish Gardaí and the Northern Irish RUC, depending on which side of the border O'Hare was on at the time. For anyone listening who isn't Irish, the plural for our police force is Gardaí, the singular is Garda. One of his earliest run-ins with the law happened in 1977, when he was just 20. He was found in the Irish border town of Castleblaney by Gardaí, in possession of a Colt 38 special revolver and 5 rounds of ammunition. O'Hare claimed that he had the gun on him because he was afraid he would be picked up by the British Army Regiment, the SAS. They weren't allowed to enter the Republic of Ireland, but had just been caught by Gardaí in 1976 after entering the country covertly in what became known as the Flagstaff Hill incident. The incident was deeply embarrassing for the British government and highlighted how much the security forces on either side of the border did not see eye to eye. The British wanted to chase IRA paramilitaries across the border into the Republic of Ireland, and the Irish government absolutely did not want to allow British soldiers on Irish territory, so had no intention of inviting them in. O'Hare claimed in this instance that he was 17 at the time, and his barrister argued that if he was sent to Portlaoise prison in Ireland, he would end up corrupted and radicalised. The judge agreed, and O'Hare was released without having to serve any time in prison, and it wasn't long before he resumed his paramilitary activity. 1 year later, in August 1978, Gary Cass was celebrating his wedding day in the town of Trim in Ireland. He was a lieutenant in the British Army and had just emerged out of the church with his new wife when he was shot twice. Cass was wounded but ultimately survived the attack. One of the wedding guests was an army officer trained in identification techniques, later positively identified O'Hare as one of the gunmen. As well as that, forensic evidence showed that O'Hare's clothing contained residue of a discharged firearm. Despite the identification and evidence that he had shot a gun, O'Hare was acquitted, with the judge saying that a conviction where a single visual identity was at the core of the case was unsafe. O'Hare was a free man once again, but it wasn't long before he was involved in another attack. Later that year, he was shot in the hand and leg as he was taking part in an IRA attack. A British Army foot patrol in O'Hare's hometown of Keady in Armagh spotted 3 men acting suspiciously and approached them. As they approached them, the 3 men opened fire on the soldiers and then fled in a truck. While heading towards the border, they stopped at the home of an off-duty officer and opened fire. He fired back and the men sped off across the border into Monaghan. The 3 men were 20-year-old O'Hare, 24-year-old Padraig McIlvenna, and 20-year-old Eugene McNamee. McNamee died shortly after from gunshot wounds sustained in the attack. The other 2 were admitted into the hospital with their wounds. Remember, though there was cross-border communication between the RUC and the Gardaí, the relationship was not very good. So by jumping across the border, the men would then get a head start before the RUC could notify the Gardaí of the attack, and sometimes they didn't notify them at all. Ultimately, O'Hare was never charged for this incident, but when he left the hospital after recovering from his wounds, he went to a Garda station to get his car. The Garda refused to give him back his car and a fight ensued. As a result of this, O'Hare was arrested and sentenced to serve 6 months behind bars. O'Hare was a part of a specific unit of the IRA that was tasked with killing off-duty members of the Northern Irish Police Service, the RUC, and members of the UDR. The UDR was a Northern Irish regiment of the British Army. During this period of the mid to late 70s, O'Hare became adept at attacking members of the security forces in their homes at night. In South Armagh alone, 63 service force members and Protestant civilians were killed in this way. And O'Hare even once boasted to journalist Vincent Brown that he was involved in the killing of 28 individuals. As O'Hare's notoriety increased, the media dubbed him the Border Fox, as he always seemed to get away from gunfights at the last second. Throughout 1979, O'Hare's relationship with the Provisional IRA was becoming somewhat strained. It was believed at this time that he had already begun to leave the Provisionals for the other Republican group, the INLA. It was around this time O'Hare said that he wanted to start killing Irish Gardaí as well. It's now October 1979, and it's 4 months after the shooting in Armagh. O'Hare and 2 other IRA members were in a car filled with guns and ammunition, driving across the border from Monaghan to Armagh. When they were confronted by armed Gardaí, they fled the scene in the car and the Gardaí began to chase them. The chase came to an abrupt end when O'Hare crashed the car into a field, breaking both of his ankles in the process. One of his associates in the car also died from his injuries sustained. For this incident, O'Hare was sentenced to serve 9 years behind bars. He was 23 by now, and just before he was arrested, he got engaged to Claire Doyle, with the two having a daughter. Even though he was only 23, he had gained the attention of the Gardaí, and his reputation was well known, as someone potentially involved in a number of murders of members of the security forces. An appeal hearing took place after O'Hare was convicted, which he tried to escape from, bolting out of the room and jumping onto a balcony. He then tried to jump out a window, but was stopped by Gardaí. O'Hare served his time in Portlaoise Prison in the middle of Ireland, and it was there he married Claire. He was then released from prison in 1986 and claimed that he had turned over a new leaf and had become a pacifist after studying Martin Luther King, Mahatma Gandhi and Owen Sheehy Skeffington. This pacifism didn't last very long, and O'Hare immediately began associating with his comrades in the INLA. The problem was, the INLA had gone through a lot of changes since the death of Seamus Costello some 9 years previously. By the mid to late 80s, the paramilitary group had split into three factions, and an intense feud between factions in Belfast and Dundalk was underway. O'Hare joined in and took part in the killing of four opponents, Thomas Maguire, James McDade, Fergus Conlon and Tony McCluskey. The killing of Tony McCluskey was particularly shocking for the people of Ireland. He was a former associate of O'Hare, but O'Hare believed that McCluskey set up or fingered three of his INLA associates, so O'Hare wanted him to suffer before he died. In an interview with the Sunday Tribune, O'Hare said that he was determined to inflict a hard death on McCluskey. McCluskey was tortured by O'Hare, who used a pair of bolt cutters to slice pieces of flesh off him. He had his earlobes cut, and I came across some sources saying that his finger was chopped off and stuffed down his throat before he was shot and killed. Chopping off his finger was a symbolic gesture in O'Hare's eyes to the man who had fingered his INLA men. O'Hare has claimed to have taken part in a large number of deaths, so it can be difficult to ascertain which ones he actually was involved in and which ones he is lying about. He did claim that he killed Dr. Death, Jerry Steenson, but this was proved to be false. On New Year's Day, 1987, he attacked a neighbour who was a part-time member of the Ulster Defence Regiment. Instead of killing the neighbour, he accidentally shot and killed the neighbour's mother, 72-year-old Iris Farley. Another victim believed to be attributed to O'Hare is 24-year-old Margaret Hurst. She joined the UDR so that she could get some money together to raise her child. Her position in the UDR was enough for her to be targeted by Republicans. On October 8, 1977, a group of men paid a visit to the caravan that Margaret, her mother and her daughter lived in. They took the women hostage before shooting Margaret dead in front of her 3-year-old daughter. She was shot 9 or 10 times by the men. A bullet nearly struck the child too, instead passing through a Kermit the Frog toy that she was gripping in fear as she watched her mother's execution. Images of the toy with the bullet hole in it were splashed across newspapers the following week. 1 year after Margaret's death, her father, 52-year-old Ross Hurst, was abducted and executed by the IRA, who claimed that he was an informer. 2 weeks after the death of Margaret, 67-year-old retired police officer Herbert Anderson was killed by O'Hare and his gang. O'Hare had known Herbert since he was a child. Some sources have described O'Hare as a predatory Republican killer who would get up close and personal when carrying out a murder. The Provisionals eventually had to warn the INLA to rein him in, saying he would be shot if they couldn't find a way to control him. During his time after his release from prison, O'Hare set up a group called the Irish Revolutionary Brigade, which had a handful of members, and he also began trying to raise funds for the INLA. Though he claimed that these fundraising efforts were on behalf of Irish Republicans and to raise money for the INLA, some retired Gardaí believed that he was looking to increase his personal wealth. He began taking part in extortion plots, armed robberies and kidnappings.
It is Ryan here and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? a woo-hoo-er, a hand clapper, a high-fiver. I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The crime that Desi O'Hare would be most well known for occurred on October 13, 1987. O'Hare and three other INLA members hatched a plan to kidnap the wealthy medical businessman Austin Darra. Darra, who founded the charity the Irish Cancer Society, had a home in Cabinteely, Dublin, but had moved out 3 years previously, and his daughter and son-in-law lived there instead. O'Hare and his men didn't realise that Darra no longer lived in the house. And failing to get Darra, the men then targeted his son-in-law, dentist John O'Grady. They took him hostage and demanded a ransom of 1.5 million Irish pounds. This led the Gardaí to carry out one of the biggest investigations in the history of the state to find and rescue John. He was initially imprisoned in Dublin and then moved to Cork, where he was held in a shipping container. The Gardaí did discover this site, but O'Hare and his captive escaped after exchanging gunfire with the Gardaí and fleeing in a hijacked car. They eventually ended up returning to Dublin. After not answering ransom demands quick enough, O'Hare decided to show how serious he was. He wanted to convince the government or family to pay the ransom, so the gang pinned down O'Grady and stood in his arms, placing a pillow in his mouth. Desi O'Hare then used a hammer and chisel to chop off the top part of both of O'Grady's little fingers. A table knife was then heated under an electric fire and then used to cauterize his fingers, which stopped the bleeding. The fingers were then placed in an envelope and placed in a church in Carlow for his family to find, alongside a picture of John's mutilated hands. A phone call was recorded where you can hear O'Hare saying, quote, "It just cost John two of his fingers. Now I'm going to chop him into bits and pieces and send fresh lumps of him every fucking day if I don't get my money fast.
I just sent word to my man to chop off two of his fingers. Now, and I'm going to chop him up in bits and pieces and send fresh lumps of him every fucking day if I don't get my money fast."
Speaking earlier this year on the podcast Nicola Tallant's Crime Watch, Father Brian Darcy explained that the family had actually decided to pay the ransom and plans were in motion to arrange a handover, on the proviso that John was returned alive. So Father Darcy drove to Cork with the ransom money, but was told by the Gardaí in Cork that the changeover was not to happen. Gardaí detectives were never too far behind O'Hare, and eventually found the house in Dublin that he was hiding out in with his hostage. Upon coming upon the house, a shootout ensued, and O'Hare escaped yet again. A Garda was seriously injured in the exchange of bullets. Though O'Hare escaped, John was rescued after being held captive for 23 days. He returned to his job as a dentist and rarely spoke about his ordeal. Desi O'Hare was now the most wanted man in Ireland, and the Gardaí offered a £100,000 reward for any information that would lead to his arrest. At one stage, he was spotted outside a takeaway in Dunlear, County Louth. After he got into an argument with his wife and fired shots at her, other sources I've come across said that the argument was in Dublin and that he shot her in the thigh. Then shortly after this, he surfaced again in Urlingford, County Kilkenny. His car sped through an Irish Defence Forces checkpoint and a firefight ensued. O'Hare was shot 8 times and the driver of the car, Martin Byrne, was killed. This was the 3rd time a man in O'Hare's company was killed trying to evade the police. So this was it. O'Hare was finally caught. The man who once said he'd die before getting caught came quite close to fulfilling that prophecy. After years of evading the RUC, British Army, Irish Army and Gardaí, the Border Fox had been snared. He had been shot 8 times but ultimately survived the shooting and was watched around the clock by armed Gardaí as he lay recovering in his bed in St Vincent's Hospital.
Desmond O'Hare, the man most wanted by Irish police, was discharged from hospital last night. He'd been there for 6 weeks after a shootout with police and army officers. His bullet wounds healed. He was questioned today for 20 hours before being taken in the back of a police ambulance to the heavily guarded special criminal court here for what state prosecutors hoped would be a speedy remand to the top security prison at Portlaoise. The army stood by outside as O'Hare was charged with kidnapping John O'Grady and maliciously wounding him, with shooting at an army lieutenant, and with the illegal possession of firearms. A slightly built, ordinary-looking man, one finger bandaged, a bad limp. He had to be helped into the dock and remained seated throughout.
The case went to trial, and O'Hare and four others, one of which was his wife Claire, faced charges for unlawfully detaining O'Grady. O'Hare was charged with false imprisonment, wounding with intent, and possession of a firearm, and he pled guilty to all charges and used his time on the stand to make some lengthy statements, claiming that he was a victim of the brutality of the British and Irish authorities, of the RUC and the Gardaí, of prison staff in jails in the north and south. All the while he was watched closely by Gardaí in case he tried to escape again. He called for Republicans to turn their guns on Irish judges, prison officers, members of the Defence Forces and Gardaí. He also launched a verbal attack against the leadership of the Provisional IRA. He finished his speech saying, quote, "May all my deeds reverberate until bloody war is waged against the British and their southern allies." O'Hare was handed down a sentence of 40 years, which was the longest fixed-term prison sentence ever handed down in the Republic of Ireland for a non-capital murder offence.
O'Hare's mother was among the many relatives and friends who crowded the public gallery today to hear the presiding judge pass sentence. Mr. Justice Hamilton said the mutilation of Mr. O'Grady had introduced a new and frightening dimension to the kidnap. It would not be tolerated by a civilised society or by the court.
The INLA were very quick to distance themselves from him, issuing a statement saying that he was not a member of the INLA, though this would change in the future, when O'Hare would end up OC of the prisoners in Portlaoise Prison. Speaking in later years about the kidnapping, O'Hare had this to say, quote, "It was a fundraising operation that failed. I haven't taken it personal, what happened to me as a result of it, and I hope that those on the other side haven't taken it personal, what happened to them. In fact, John was a totally innocent victim in that operation, and I think he understood that too." O'Hare was sent to the maximum security Portlaoise prison to serve out his sentence. Initially, he was unpopular with some of the Republican prisoners who believed that he had brought Republicanism into disrepute. During his time in prison, I found one source saying that he took up yoga, Eastern mysticism, history, psychology, and metaphysics. He also took a vow of silence, staged his own dirty protest, and eventually rejoined the INLA in the late 90s after the signing of the Good Friday Agreement. By 2001, he was commander of the INLA inmates still in prison. In the early 2000s, the IRSP, who were the political wing of the INLA, began campaigning for his release, saying that his only crime was being an active Republican. I also came across sources saying that many INLA members did not want him released, as they believed he would return to his campaign of violence. As with many other cases involving Troubles-related offences, O'Hare was released in 2008, as per the terms of the Good Friday Agreement, after serving less than half of his 40-year sentence. He enjoyed 13 years of freedom, and claimed that he was working in farming and tarmac surfacing, and that he only wanted to live out the rest of his life in peace. He said that he was working with a charity for people with disabilities, and that he also went to help out the sick people on a religious pilgrimage in Lourdes in France. However, during this time, he was also seen mixing with a number of Irish gangland figures, many of which had nothing to do with the Troubles. Things came to a head in June 2015. Martin Byrne lived with his family in a unit owned by his employer, Jim Mansfield. Mansfield was a property developer and millionaire, and employed Martin to work security on his sites. When Jim died, his son, Jim Mansfield Jr., took over his father's business interests, and I understand that Jim wanted Martin and his family to move out of the unit, but Martin refused. Desi O'Hare told Gardaí that he was unofficially employed by Jim Jr., and tasked with evicting the family from their home. Martin was summoned to meet with Mansfield Jr., but upon arrival he realised there were two other men at the meeting. He instantly recognised O'Hare and the other man, convicted murderer and former INLA man Declan Duffy. He quickly left the meeting. He was then summoned to another meeting on June 8, 2015, where he walked into a room and saw the two INLA men again. As he tried to leave, his way was blocked by five men coming in the door. Martin said that he would move out in a few days, to which O'Hare replied, quote, "It's going to happen right now. You're getting out." RTE News then reports that Martin was beaten, put into a car, beaten again, and driven back to the complex where his apartment was. The security guard who was working at the building was John Roach, and upon seeing the men, he fled to an apartment which was next door to Martin's. The men pulled Roach out of his home and attacked him, and O'Hare was seen on CCTV directing the attack as well as kicking Roach four times. His injuries were significant, with wounds to the face and scalp, as well as a fractured nose and fractured bone in his arm. Martin's wife Lisa and their son were then led out of the apartment and away from the scene of the attack. The whole incident was unfolding in broad daylight, and an off-duty Garda happened upon the scene. The men ordered Martin Byrne to tell him that everything was fine. Byrne complied but was in a dishevelled state, and the arriving guard ordered backup in the form of an armed support unit. By the time they arrived, the men had fled. O'Hare fled across the border into Northern Ireland, but this wasn't the Troubles anymore, and evading the authorities simply wasn't sustainable. He couldn't as easily disappear from sight. As the Irish government began extradition proceedings against him, to get him back into the Republic of Ireland, he returned himself and walked into the Clondalkin Garda station in Dublin with the statement in his hand, turning himself in. He was arrested and his case went to trial in early 2019, seeing him returning to a courtroom 31 years after his last appearance. He admitted assaulting John Roach and pleaded guilty to falsely imprisoning Martin Byrne. Presiding Judge Tony Hunt said that O'Hare was an organiser and high-level participant in this attack. He also said that there would be long-lasting consequences to the victims of the attack. For fear of further attacks, the Byrne family had to enter into witness protection. O'Hare's defence pled for a non-custodial sentence, arguing that prison was a, quote, "a very difficult experience for him, enduring serious, intrusive and long-term consequences." They argued that being sent back to prison would be a particularly onerous and harsh punishment. They said that the incident was a once-off and by no means reflective of the character he had shown over his last 13 years of freedom. The judge went on to say that the offending was far too serious and premeditated to be overlooked, and that, quote, "the violent side of Mr. O'Hare's personality is not in remission. The threat represented to society by Mr. O'Hare's disposition to violence has not completely abated." O'Hare was sentenced to serve 3 years for the assault on Roach and 10 years with the final three suspended for falsely imprisoning Byrne. The sentences are running concurrently. There was also a risk that he may have had to serve the remainder of his original 40-year sentence as well, as many prisoners who were released under the terms of the Good Friday Agreement were released on the proviso that they not re-engage in criminal activity. And doing so could allow the Northern Irish government to revoke their early release licences. But according to Irish law, the chance for that to happen to O'Hare expired in 2018. This was not the case for his associate Declan Duffy. In light of the attack carried out, the Northern Irish government revoked Duffy's licence and recalled him to prison in Northern Ireland to serve out a life sentence for the murder of a British Army sergeant in Derby in 1992. Duffy was extradited to Northern Ireland to serve out his sentence in 2020. In the case of Desi O'Hare, he will be released in July 2024 at the age of 67, after spending almost a third of his life behind bars. But the threat of further imprisonment will always remain. He did launch an appeal against this sentence in 2021, with his barrister suggesting that he was being sentenced for his sins of the past rather than present. But this appeal was dropped after the Court of Appeals warned that it was within their power to increase sentences as well as decrease them. Some believe that Desi O'Hare was detached from reality and deranged, and even fellow paramilitaries were concerned regarding the level of violence that he was willing to carry out. O'Hare himself believes that he was a soldier in a war, saying, quote, "War brings circumstances with it that changes our normal concepts of morality. It's a tough, dirty business, caused in the first instance by the filth of corruption. And that brings us to the end of the story of Desi O'Hare, the Border Fox. Thanks, and see you next time. So again, folks, I just want to take this time to thank you all for listening to the podcast. I hope you're enjoying the podcast and I hope you're finding it very informative. These episodes take a long time to research, write and prepare. So if you do want to support the podcast, you can do so over at patreon.com/thetroublespodcast. There's a number of different tiers there, and as well as that, I put up a lot of media related to the episodes, including reading lists, and I also release a Troubles Companion video after every episode I release here. If you'd like to support the podcast in a different way, you can also do so at buymeacoffee.com/thetroublespodcast. There you can buy me a virtual coffee, which is very appreciated. And if you'd like to support the podcast in a non-financial way, please leave a review or simply tell your friends. Each and every recommendation helps. That's it from me. Thanks again for your support.